So, hey, stop me if you've heard this one. I was the best man at my brother's wedding in Paris. At the reception, I raised my champagne glass and said, eggs, cinnamon, bread, and maple syrup. You could say it was a French toast.
Lovely.
It's so good, isn't it? All right.
Around your sailors bold and hear the tale we sing of Dr. D and Scarlet Widow, who are the stormy rings. With clever hands and daring dreams, inventor of soup held anchor's grasp. In every port the legend grew, the tales unsurpassed. Seven seas and tales of daring flight. We toast to her, our captain true, new moon and stars so bright. In tempest wild or calm a sea, the courage never fails. A master of the winds and waves, on every ship they sailed. With potion soups and remedies, they healed the sailor's blight. Cunning plans and haughty meals would steer us through the night. Raise the flag and hoist the sails, for the seas we roam. The cauldron bubbles, rich in war, our hearts they call it home. With spices from the seven seas and tales of daring flight, we toast to her, our captain true, if moon and stars so bright. Gales and waters deep, Dr. D's guidance was our guide. The Scarlet Widow, fierce and proud, with honor and with pride. Inventor of soup on the ocean vast, his name forever sung. An inventor, a captain, a jaunty lass, upon the seas they flung. Hey! Raise the flag and hoist the sails, for the seas we roam. The cauldron bubbles, rich and warm, our hearts they call it home. With spices from the seven seas and tales of daring flight, we toast to her, our captain true, if moon and stars so bright.
Hello, Arachnids. This is your host, D to the D, Dr. D, reaching out through the supervision-free source of the Spanish Main, where we don't take no crap from nobody. We take whatever we want. We touch the booty. We touch so much booty that it's kind of actually uncomfortable, and I need to go see a doctor for my carpal tunnel. Anyway, so I'm Dr. D. I'm joined today by my friend and English dad, Eric Goebbels. How's it going, brother?
It's going great. I don't know about English dad, but I'm definitely touching booty right now.
His technical term, this technical name now, his baptism name is English Daddy. That's actually written on a birth certificate that I have not mailed yet. So he doesn't know.
I might have to change my Discord name.
Correct. Now it's in podcast form, so you know it's real. That's how you know.
Oh, jeez.
So today we're going to be talking about the Summer of Plunder, definitely from the unbiased purview, shall we say, of the English side of said conflict. But first, we got to talk about some business. On Arachne, we have patrons who we really want to thank. Their names are Cyril S., Derek S., Quim B., Nick B., and Aleph is the way. Thank you very much for being a digital nomad on the Patreon. It really, really does help me cover all the costs that come up with running this little podcast, which come up way more often than you would actually think. And I really appreciate all the help that you do to help us make whatever the heck it is that we're doing right now. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And also to Audio J, you know who you are. There's this like disc thing in front of my microphone now, so it doesn't pop my peas or whatever. So hopefully it sounds better.
My hero.
So Kara's in the background talking like anyone can hear her. So, you know, we're just going to pretend. Thanks, Kara. Good job. Arachne is a part of the Professional Casual Network. If you'd like to support the network, please sign up for our Patreon or purchase some hot swag at streamlabs.com. Professional Casual Network 1. I am partially sponsored by Monument Hobbies. If you want to buy some of the coolest paint in the world, use the code Professional Casual. Get yourself a swanky little discount. You should join us on Twitch. Professional Casual and see me use those paints to paint stuff. Every Monday, I have definitely been painting Blood and Plunder as a homage to the fact that the English have a paint night, which is on Tuesdays, if you are a part of this entire thing. So if you are an English player and you are playing in the Summer of Plunder, join the Discord, join the paint night. It is actually a lot of fun for the one that I was able to go to. It's a good time, great way to build a community. We'll talk about it here shortly, I'm sure, but we will be painting Blood and Plunder on the Twitch channel pretty consistently because I do love this game. And currently we're working on a bunch of Dutchmen, and we're going to finish this Brigantine at some point. It's
Dutchmen?
Yeah, it's not for me. Again, we'll talk about it, right? Baron of Dice makes some of the coolest dice in the biz. Use the code Arachne at checkout to get yourself a swanky little 5% discount. They did just release the new Blood and Plunder and Oak and Iron dice sets for this game and Oak and Iron, which can also be used for Port Royal, in their website. You can also buy them on Firelock's website specifically. So if you have credit with their company, which I know a lot of the big people that play this game do because of all the hard work they do to keep this game going, you can buy it there as well. But if you want to buy it from Arachne, use the code, or I'm sorry, if you want to buy it from Baron of Dice, use the code Arachne to get yourself a 5% discount. And you can pretend like you're John Blood and Plunder, and you have some really cool stuff you could use to buy all this stuff. And of course, we can never forget our sponsor, Mr. Laser, at MrLaser.square.site. And also, we love Nuds. If you like Nuds, eventually I'm actually going to remember to put the link in the show notes. I keep forgetting to do it because I'm stupid. And then the events that are coming up, Manhunt, which is a narrative event. It's happening on July 26th at Tabletop Nexus. That is an Infinity event. It's a really cool community-made, like, bounty hunter system thing. It's really cool. I should be able to go to that, as far as I'm aware. So if you're really looking forward to some narrative Infinity fun, I would recommend you show up. Or don't. I'm not your dad, but Einrich is, if you're English. And then we have an Infinity tournament at Webway Games in Marlboro on August 17th. Gen Con is happening August 1st and 2nd. Nova is happening on August 23rd. Specifically, that is for the Cyberpunk event, but there is also a Blood and Plunder land and sea tournament on Saturday and Sunday, I do believe. I should be there for both of them. So if you want to say hi to me, don't. Stay away from me because I'm going to be climbing my way to the top, and if I know your name, I'm going to feel bad when I get last place. So take that, idiot. Nexus Cube, Free or Die, is happening September 13th. Midgard is having their Warcrow Husk Halloween event on October 11th, which also says Tabletop Nexus, so I got to correct that. I don't know who to believe anymore. And then Beantown Beatdown is happening December 6th and 7th at Everwinter Gaming Convention at the Hyatt Regency, downtown Boston, which is where I am located. If you are interested in playing a variety of games, ranging from GW to Infinity and blah, 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 use the code SPRING10 to get yourself 10% off your ticket. I highly recommend you go. The Everwinter Gaming Convention is quickly becoming the big tournament, I guess, of the Northeast that is not sponsored by Frontline Gaming or anything. So I really want to see it succeed, and I'm going to do everything I can to make it so. So we're going to start with our show. Hey, Big GG, English Daddy.
Yes.
Welcome to the show. Obviously, this is the first time you've been on the show, and anytime we have someone new, we like to talk about their nerd origin story. So I'm going to ask you, what is your nerd origin story? I bet you didn't see that coming. Go ahead, go.
It's, first off, it's a long story, so I'll give you the short one. So it started, like many kids in the 90s, started with Pokemon cards. At the age of 11, I was already competing in tournaments in the younger age bracket, but then kind of grew out of that naturally and branched into miniatures, playing Star Wars miniatures, the original Heroescape, and Pirates of the Spanish Main, the little pirate ships that you could pop out of the cards. Loved that.
I never actually got a chance to play that game, but it looks so cool.
The rules itself were pretty basic, but you know, it got on the table fast and looked cool doing it. And that's a lot of what matters in a game shop. And then moved back into card games with competitive Game of Thrones Living card game, but then that was discontinued by FFG. So I moved back into the mini space with Oak and Iron, which kind of reminded me of the Spanish Main game, and then have now branched out to nearly all of Firelock's products.
And I have seen in the Discord that you are what some might call a menace when people talk about Oak and Iron, and how you have supposedly, like, is it true that you've, like, won every single one of them at Adepticon or something?
Yes. Every Adepticon that I've gone to and Historicon event that I've participated in, I have placed first place in Oak and Iron.
That's a pretty casual claim right there. You're well, you could say
you dabble. Too immodest, right?
You could say you dabble in the game a little bit, though.
I've played it once or twice.
That's amazing. As someone who I've only ever won one tournament, and it was from Alifo Second Edition, which was like a million years ago. Shout out to younger Dylan, who still had hope and energy. That's really cool. So obviously you're coming at this game from somebody who has been able to win stuff. As you said, you've played some competitive other games. I have also played the Game of Thrones card game and really, really enjoyed it. House Greyjoy for life.
Nice. Did you play first edition or second edition?
I played both.
Oh, see, I got in on second, but a lot of folks played. Yeah.
It's interesting how that game even had like a version before the FFG one. I actually have cards from like the original Game of Thrones card game before like wow. The show had come out. Yeah, I was like way back in the day. I didn't play it back then because I was still, I might not have even been born yet, of course, but you know, it's fun. It's fun to dream.
Second edition was amazing. I can't say enough nice things about that game, actually.
The art was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was also a great game. Also, anyone who played Hyper Viper decks, bite me.
I did not. I was I played Night's Watch a lot, Lannister a lot.
Classic.
Not specifically not the wall decks. I could not defend the wall. That was not fun.
It was a cool... I thought it was an interesting mechanic, I guess.
It was a cool mechanic, but it wasn't fun to play against because your entire strategy was a turtle deck. And right. I don't like playing control. I like playing aggro. So playing Night's Watch aggro was a challenge, but fun.
But we're not here to talk about that game. We're here to talk about other stuff. So obviously, first question I always like to ask in situations like this is, how did you find Blood and Plunder?
Yeah, so I didn't know much about Blood and Plunder at all. I had actually seen the Kickstarter for Oak and Iron, and again, that was nostalgic for the Pirates of the Spanish Main game, and I was like, I really want a naval battle game. It was appealing because it was only like six models to get onto the table quick. So I went to Historicon in 2021, and I actually did a Blood and Plunder demo, and the guy set me up with a bark, and I was like, this game's kind of lame. I'm not really feeling it. And then a year later, the Raise the Black, or maybe a year and a half later, the Raise the Black Kickstarter came out with the big starter box. And I got that for Christmas, and I've been hooked since. But I mean, that starts you off on the right foot, right? Two ships, a bunch of sailors, and Blackbeard. So who wouldn't want that?
I think that board, that box, is such insane value for what it's for, like how much you pay for it. That I think you instantly get sucked into like a cost, like a sunken cost fallacy, because you're just thinking like, I paid how much for what?
Yeah. And the box is massive. I mean,
it's huge
compared to what other companies sell you and their box sizes for that price. You feel good walking out of the hobby shop.
I mean, if you were to find that box even slightly on discount, the deal you get is just crazy. So if you are listening to this and you've even been mildly interested in this game, I think that's a great place to start. The sailors are generic, so you can use them for any of the factions. Obviously, Blackbeard and Maynard are specific to Pirates and English, or British, I guess, when that box technically comes out. But it's a really, really good box because you could even paint up. I mean, Maynard looks like a nerd, so you could just use him as like a regular sea dog or something like that. Obviously, Blackbeard's a little bit more like defined, but it's an absolutely phenomenal box. And I'm not surprised that it sucked you into the game.
No, I mean, it was an easy selling point. Two fun ships, a lot of hobby time getting into the paint space. It was a lot of fun. And then, you know, painting that up for the paint contest the Blood and Pigment does too. It's just really good community sucks you into, right? Engaging with the community. So
shout out to Blood and Pigment. Obviously, we interviewed them two episodes ago, I believe, for Raise the Black. So if you're interested in it at all, we talk about Summer of Plunder. Absolutely great guys. They're great to talk to. So if you're interested in this game at all, you will bump into them in the Discord. They're very, very vocal. So yeah, if you're interested at all, go find them. And definitely check out the website if you're interested in this game at all. It's fantastic, and it's criminal how other game systems don't have websites like that sometimes.
It's definitely a special game, and it deserves a special community.
And you could say that other members of the community, such as Mr. English Daddy here, he is the original, you're the one that started the Thieves Harbor website, which is very similar to the Blood and Pigment in a lot of ways, for specifically Port Royal, which is Firelock's new Mordheim-inspired game where you run around the ruins of Port Royal in Jamaica after the earthquake. And you are actually responsible for the earthquake scenario, which we played in the very first week of Summer Plunder, which we adored. How has that been for you?
No. So we'll talk about the scenario first. I'm really glad that you enjoyed it. It's a bit of a chaotic scenario. I've played it where you can summon or spawn 30 villagers that you're, you know, killing in amongst the quake. But designing the quake experience, I wanted something that was chaotic, but would give you an alternative to starting a campaign. So a little high risk, high reward, you know, you can get some artifact weapons out of that quite easily. But I wanted players to experience, you know, what actually happened during the quake as much as you can on a tabletop game without everyone dying, right? But being there in the chaos, starting your campaign that way gives a little bit more of a narrative flair. And I think we achieved that while still maintaining historical accuracy as well. And there was no better way to debut that than the Summer of Plunder this year. And I was very lucky to have the opportunity to participate with Pigment on that.
Yeah, talk about a really dynamite start to the campaign. Me and Kara really enjoyed it. Great way to start. And your guys will be hit in the head with many rocks.
Yeah, if they're not caught in a building when it liquefies.
That almost happened. I had a guy in a tower and that event came up. Because the concept of it, which we'll talk about real briefly, is there is a growing number of events that happen. And there is a table specifically for it, which is the city being annihilated by the earthquake that's happening. And it starts with significantly less of them. I believe at the end of turn one, you do literally one, and then you go to three and then five. And then when you get to the fifth one of a six turn game, it is insanely chaotic because everybody's getting hit with things and things are falling down and people are running around. It's really cool.
All in addition to the normal events that are happening too.
Correct. So definitely a highlight.
Historically mimics the three major quakes that were increasing in intensity. So,
and if you are interested at all in the historical significance of Port Royal, you definitely should look it up. Port Royal was definitely the British capital of the Spanish Main, which is now known as the Caribbean, for a very long period of time. And the island itself still has the repercussions of that earthquake to this day in a lot of ways, where it has changed the economic value of the island since it happened.
Just naturally,
it used to be a buccaneer stronghold in a lot of ways. And then as soon as that earthquake hit, it lost all that value. And obviously a lot of the economic prosperity that followed it, because it was pretty much planned. It was definitely mostly plantation driven after that earthquake, especially. And the Captain Morgan's grave was sunken into the ocean in that event. So that's a neat little tidbit.
I also think you can go diving in some of what's left. I don't think there's a lot left, but I think you can dive and see some of it off the coast still.
And that's just rad. I mean, it's like, because up here in Boston, I'm going to say the wrong pirate. I think was it Black Bart that he crashed in a storm up here, where you can actually go and see the museum for him specifically, where you can like look at all the stuff that was in his cabin or whatever. And it was like one of the first real good, powerful glimpses into how pirates live their life.
Yeah, I believe so.
I think it was Black Bart. So if you're interested, if you're in New England, you should definitely check it out. I want to say it's in Massachusetts. It might be. I think he crashed in Massachusetts waters. I don't know specifically, but it's up here somewhere. Definitely recommend it. It's a very good time.
I think that rule is actually reflected in Blood and Plunder as well. So
yeah, he's got the Misfortune at Sea rule, which is also alongside Henry Morgan, because he was well known for ramming his ships on land because he's a big goofball, that Henry Morgan.
He played too many video games. He thought it would be a good idea.
And the first thing everybody wants to do when they start playing this game is like, can I ram my ship into the other person's ship? And I'm like, ships don't do that now. They're not Roman triarii. That's not what these are for.
And they're like, I'm going to ram the ship.
You can go through Discord and like every few months someone asks, and every time all the history guys come in and we explain it again and again and again.
Ships are not for ramming. Stop ramming things with them unless you're in the Mediterranean in like 1 BC. Come on, guys. Jeez, read a book. So anyway, it was foretold many, many years ago on a scroll in the Dead Sea that said, and I'm gonna say it perfectly right now. Okay, and it said, "Yo, in the year of our Lord 2025, we're gonna have an English dad king by the name of Goble, and he's gonna be rad AF." And let me tell you, I'm definitely not biased, and we are definitely not a state-sponsored, crown-owned podcast. We are going to give you nothing but the truth and the honest truth. So everything we say, do not question me, or we will send you to the stakes and we'll embarrass you publicly, okay? So is it true that you are the king that was promised?
I'd like to say that I'm definitely rising to be that. I think this year we... No, I think last year the English, or yeah, last summer plunder, the English had a great time. You know, we didn't win, but I think we had the best time out of all the factions. And that's, you know, that's a win in itself. And this year, I think we're off to a great start. I think we're well positioned strategically to take it over. And we're having fun to boot. And what else can you ask for your king? Less taxes.
You could, but you know what? I just want there to be more sunlight hitting the English Empire at all times. You know what I mean?
No, it's true. We could use a little bit more good favor our way.
I think so. Yeah, I do. I think so too. And with a king like ours, I mean, it's going to happen. There's no way it can't.
No, I mean, so to touch on what the English are doing a little bit this year, you know, we host a paint night every Tuesday night where we get together and we play. We've got that for the Americas. We've also got a European paint night. So if you're interested, check out the Discord. We've also got a reputation system where you earn points every week by participating. And then at the end of the campaign, we have some really cool participation prizes for our top players. We've got promo minis, promo activation tokens, etc. Some 3D printed terrain as well. So we really foster getting together, talking, meeting people. You know, this is an international game, so let's get to know each other a little bit.
And I think that even after Summer of Plunder ends, it would be cool to kind of just continue the concept of a paint night for Blood and Plunder specifically, because it is criminal how more people do not play this game. I mean, we were in South Park. This game was in South Park.
It was.
Because, believe it or not, one of the creators of South Park plays this game and loves it.
I mean,
that's amazing.
It's a great game, and we should definitely do paint nights. We've talked about opening the paint night, you know, 1 week to all the factions to try to, you know, curry some favor as well. So
I think it's a great idea, unless someone there plays the French, in which case you need to get away from me because you disgust me.
Yeah, I don't know about the French this year. You know, they've been poking us a little bit too much. And to be fair, we've poked them too, but...
Well, listen, at the end of week... Okay, so at the time of recording, we are nearing the end of week three. We're like right in front of the weekend leading it into the end of week three.
Time
and I have
flying.
To say, it is. It really is. Me and Kara have been logging... I've been logging games like a fiend. I actually was on the list for... top number of players, like top number of games reported. And I was like, geez, I guess I
nice. Have a, congratulations.
Have, thank you, man. I have a problem. And so when I wake up and I'm like, ooh, a little thing from Blood and Pigment, they're going to talk about all the cool stuff that happened in this campaign. It essentially was just a headline report of France attacks unsolicitedly the English. absolutely disgusting with their
right off the bat. They hit us. Yeah.
The guy at the front, the referee with the little pistol, the little 38 special, he's like, bang! And then the French were like, die, idiot! And they came over, and they pushed over all our trash cans, and then they told their silly little Spanish friends, be like, hey, you over there, flail around, and be a silly Billy.
They're you know, they're allied, but hey, the French definitely have it out for us right now. Or did.
They do. And you know what? Spain, if you really want to make a statement, stop letting them overshadow you. You should punch them now. I mean, listen, I don't know if you've heard of Napoleon, and I know it doesn't happen for like another 100 years, but you guys aren't going to get along very well real soon. So why don't you just get them now while the getting's good?
You know, I was worried about the Spanish, but they've only hit 1 out of 7 of their attacks thus far. So we'll see.
If you want a real strong dad who could beat up other people's dads, you should come join with us in the English, and we could have a real romp and I don't even know what that means, romp and time in the Spanish Main. What are you doing with the French? They're
we're gonna make it the English Main.
That's right. You want to be a part of this? You want to be a part of the English Main, Spain? You get over here and we'll start negotiating, okay? Ridiculous. So as far as the campaign, like I said, we're nearing the end of the third week. I've been having a great time, and I think pretty much everyone I've talked to has at least enjoyed themselves on some level. How do you feel as the leader? How do you think we are doing? You kind of said this already a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I think coming out of the first week, we were a little shocked. You know, we got attacked by both Spain and France. So we started the campaign on the back foot. But I think coming out of the second week, we've regained some ground. We've gotten our points back. I think we've got some momentum that's going to start to build here, or at least stay consistent, which I'd be very happy with. Paint night attendance has been fantastic. We've got people that are already getting promoted within our ranks, from master to lieutenant in the Discord. And we've got some really cool alliances brewing, talking to a bunch of different nations. So, you know, the campaign as a whole is a lot of fun. From a leader perspective, last year I was second in command, so I didn't experience the stress of being first in command, especially on Tuesdays when the updates come out. You're bombarded. Every leader is like, WTF, what's going on? And like messaging each other. And it's a really busy day of politics, but it's a whole different experience being on the leadership side of things.
And I think that is something that a lot, because there were some questions even in the English channel where people were not aware, I guess, of the larger game inside the game, right? I think it'd be really productive, or at least interesting, as a leader of one of the nations, when you're doing stuff, what are you doing? Like, what are the choices you're making? What are some of the things that you could do? What are some of the things that we could do to make the French lose faster? Is there, like, anything that might be interesting that you could tell us?
Well, attacking the French some more would make them lose faster for sure. Raiding them.
Interesting.
But this year, things have changed a little bit. So I'll describe how commander stuff goes this year. I get three actions. So I can contribute my actions to add a point to attacking or defending. But the player votes are going to be really what's determining that. You guys are the main strength. You're going to be adding 4 points to the attack or 4 points to the defense. So I'm only swinging with 1 point. So I'm really more of an extension of you guys. I either support you guys or I could go against you guys or maybe defend a different location that doesn't need as many points. The other options we can do are a little bit more political. We can trade. So if we trade with a faction, we get a point. And if they trade with us the same week, we each get 2 points. So that facilitates some of the alliances that we've been building. We can also cede territories or raid territories, which is about, you know, a 60%, 50 to 60% chance to be a positive for us and a negative for them, or vice versa. Negative for us, positive for them. So there's a lot of that going on. But mainly what I'm doing is just, you know, Discord chatting and phone calling these other leaders to try to piece out what they're going to be doing and hopefully trusting them each week and relaying these commands to you guys in the channel. And in the English, we run it pretty democratically. We talk at our paint nights. What are we thinking? What are we feeling? What are we going to be attacking this week? And I try to go along with what the players want each week.
But that's the beautiful thing about the English governmental system, is that there is a parliament and there is a king. And ultimately, it's those two things working together that makes one of the highest per capita stabbings per city. And that's what we love.
I don't think we've had any stabbings yet, but you know, the campaign is young.
I have played a few games and many Englishmen have been stabbed. Let me tell you right now, I have seen many of my Englishmen under my command be stabbed by a wide arrangement of objects. Okay. And
Okay.
Some more gruesome than others.
I've beat a few Englishmen.
And so now, as you said, there's a lot of diplomacy involved with this. And so I posed you a very important question. Who is the mainest bro and why is it the Dutch?
The Dutch are fantastic. So Admiral Jaden King last year, who's top lead, formed an alliance with the Dutch and carried it throughout the entire summer last year, handling it off like gentlemen. Even at the end, when the Dutch were obviously in the win or in the lead, the English, we did not go back on our alliance. So coming into this year, you know, me and Matthew were in talks early on to try to continue that brotherhood going into this year. And so far that's been great. This past week, we've had some stray votes that have kind of caused an attack that we didn't intend, but I think we've patched things off for now, and our alliance is still going to go strong moving forward.
And which that raises a very important thing to consider, especially as the players, because some people may not know, is that you do not, you as English Daddy, don't know who is voting for what, because you do not get to see the votes until like the very end when the week is over.
No, there's an extreme and thick fog of war. Sure, we can issue our commands, but we have players that aren't in the Discord that don't see the commands that are contributing votes. And if those people vote so strongly one way, they might go against what the main English force is doing. And that was definitely the case of what happened this past week. We've taken measures not only to flog those individuals, but to adapt how we issue our commands and how we're voting for the different locations to avoid that from happening again, hopefully.
And I think it's a really cool system that can create that kind of obfuscation. If I said that correctly, please make fun of me if I didn't. But it's an interesting way to kind of spice up some gameplay just because of the fact that now you have imperfect information, which is very rare and difficult to do in a miniatures game just because of the fact that you have to have rules. Just because if you don't have those guidelines, you don't have a game, right? So
no. Fog of War outside of something like D&D is very hard to do. And D&D, you can only do it because you have someone who's running the game for you, basically.
With a fog machine.
If you're not a poor college student playing D&D, yeah, a fog machine.
And we talk about Fog of War. That's, oh my gosh. So, no. Yeah, if you have a fog machine, no one knows what you're doing. So keep it up. Keep up the hard work, and I hope you can afford the electricity to pay for that thing.
I enjoy the Fog of War. I think it adds an element of diplomacy that, you know, deepens the interactions between, you know, the leaders and the players a little bit more. So I hope that the players don't come out of the campaign, you know, necessarily hating that and see it as a strength for the system.
So me and editor Kara, we have talked about this where there are certain games out there, Mordheim, a lot of old GW like specialty games where you have like campaign systems and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. There are times where the measure of the man comes into effect, where you have to realize that it's okay to not have, you have to let go at a certain point where you're like, okay, it's okay if I lose. It's okay that I don't know the perfect answer to things. And I think that systems like this and games that introduce that kind of unawareness, that just like that sense of like you don't know the perfect answer, I think it's a great way to learn a level of sportsmanship that I think is very important to this community, because I think some people do forget that. It's okay to not make the most optimal choice, especially if you don't know what that choice is. And it's not your like your self-esteem should not be on on full display for that. Does that make sense?
No, 100%. I think styles of games bring out different aspects of people, and Blood and Plunder, you know, at the tournament scene, much like any game at a tournament scene, really brings out that really competitive nature. And it's actually one of the reasons why I've leaned so hard into Port Royal and some other games from other companies that focus more on story-based gameplay or campaign-based gameplay. And it really allows you to kind of explore that other side of yourself. Because at tournaments, I get very competitive. It's almost like a trance, right? But in Port Royal, I'm relaxed. I'm sitting back. You know, my guy might die, but it's part of the campaign. It's part of the story. And that's very fun, too. And I view the Summer Plunder much that way. I'm here to have a good time, meet the community, and play a game while doing it.
Anything that can create an emotional response when you're playing with your little plastic dollies, it's got to be doing something pretty well if it can get something like that out of you.
The fact that you name them, I think, is the big thing in Port Royal. So
be a man and do what I do and have a generic commander that when he dies, his son takes over. And then, you know, the Beetlebug name lives on.
If your commander's not on the front line, you're playing it wrong anyway. So
yeah, if your commander does not have the lead by example rule, you must be French. And you disgust me. So there you go. By the way, real life French people, I do love you. And I love all the food and things you've done, like French kissing. Good job. I really appreciate all those little considerations.
French people do not love you.
That's fine.
Is French kissing specifically from France, actually?
I have no idea. But you know what? I'm not willing to take that chance right now. Okay. I'm already on the knife's edge when it comes to the French population. I can't have another strike on me. I'm already not allowed within 50 feet of an ice cream factory. I cannot take that risk right now. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, so as the commander, after having done this at this point two times, is there anything that you've learned that you think maybe the other leaders, like maybe they should learn or maybe they should unlearn?
I mean, some of the basics, you know, playing this is a lot like playing the Game of Thrones. People are going to stab you in the back. And who could you really trust at the end of the day? Right. People
can
say, you know, I trust the Dutch. But people can say it. They're like, I'm not going to attack you this week as they slowly slip the knife into your back. So don't trust anyone. Defense has a lot of value. And have fun with it. That's the most important thing. Is remember it's a game, right? And we're all people behind all these players. So
absolutely. And every single time I see somebody talk or even just appreciate this game, it reminds me that someone took the time to type something out, to learn something, to even formulate that question, which I think is great because people are invested. And I really think that this campaign is a great example of that community coming together to do something that is very hard to replicate.
No. And honestly, we should all be very appreciative. There are many games out there that deserve communities like this, and they just do not have them. And we're talking about a global campaign that we're putting on. So it's fantastic.
And I think that is in itself a really cool thing. If you play this game and then all of a sudden you are inspired to go to another country or whatever, and you could even potentially go into the Discord and be like, hey, I'm going to be in Denmark, whatever. You could even ask, be like, hey, can we play a game for Summer of Plunder? And that there's a very good chance that somebody might be willing to come meet you and play a game. And they might not even steal your kidney.
No, I went to a different state for a work conference, and I actually met up with someone from the Discord and played a game. So right there is a great example.
What a great way to make friends. So if you are interested in being friendly, you should do that and go make some friends. You loner, stop listening to me. Go make a friend. Okay.
Especially for a miniatures game, which, you know, everyone plays the big names. So you might not have a great local community, but you That's do true. Have a great international community.
So as your, I guess, chief intelligence officer right now, because I'm the one with the fancy glasses and the headphones on, right? Let me ask you a few questions that maybe some other English players are wondering, and maybe Firelock might be listening to this. So let's just say the bonus objective for week three, New England Village Garrison. What's up with that? Does anybody want to tell me what's going on with that?
Yeah, so this was actually a repeat of one of our weekly objectives from last year, but it was such a hit that we had to do an encore. And my philosophy with weekly objectives like this is to force people to list build in a different way. It's actually one of the things I like about the Game of Thrones card games, list building. And coming into this, you know, putting limitations on you in different ways, I think, gets you to think about units in different ways. And this is an extreme example because you're playing one of the worst factions in the game. But if you think about it, there's creative ways to play it and build it. And, you know, it's a different experience than most people would probably have.
And if you've ever asked yourself, man, what if I had an entire army that died on an 8 when it got shot by a bullet?
And only had, you know, a quarter of the muskets than any other army. Yeah. How could I win? And, you know, it's not easy, but you could do it.
I'm here to issue a challenge to all the other factions whose bonus objective is, like, while we're like, reinvent the atom, all the other ones are like, make sure you keep breathing when you're playing. Don't suffocate. Use the marksman rule or whatever.
Like, take a picture
of your face and put it up and get yourself a fancy point. And the English is like, can you invent dynamite with nothing but a paperclip and some like used discarded like candy wrappers?
No, exactly. MacGyver yourself out of the situation. Last year, we had another objective that was like, kill someone with a musket and with a bayonet. So you specifically had to play around it. I like that stuff.
It's so difficult. Oh, my goodness. But it's really cool. And I agree. I think that the forced limitations makes it a little bit more interesting. I've definitely had some laughs, that's for sure.
Well, good.
I now know how fortifications work.
Yeah, if you've never read those rules, it would force you to do it. So
yeah, you could definitely.
the French show up with siege expert and a bunch of guns, and you're just boned.
What a bunch of jerks. It's always the, why is it always the French? Huh?
They might be the only one with that special role. I'm not really dogging on them, but...
Because I know that there's at least a couple legendary commanders that have the Castellan keyword, which is like you get improved defenses while inside. I think there's a couple Spanish ones. I don't know. I don't think there's any
Spanish.
French.
I think Dutch. A few Dutchmen have it.
But I don't know if anyone has ever taken those characters ever. And if you've taken them, I think you're a lot. I think you're lying to me.
I've never played them. No.
But it's a really cruel and cruel way to play the game. That's for sure. And obviously, all of the different countries, I think, have some slight variation of what we do in the English part of the game, which is we have little like side objectives that happen in like the country itself inside the Discord, where the French and their naive ways of being silly billies were doing sea shanties, which I thought was a really, really cool idea.
No, I love sea shanties probably more than your average Joe. I listen to them when I work because I'm a super nerd. So when I saw them doing that, I was a little jealous this week, I have to admit. I think one of the French players actually wrote and sang an original sea shanty.
He sure did.
Which is, I mean, that's really cool. Props to that guy.
And it's pretty good, too. So if you're curious, go to Blood and Pigment. I believe there is an audio file of him singing it, I think?
I think so, yeah.
That's incredible. And then obviously the Spanish are doing their Santiago voice collection thing where they're collecting a bunch of people screaming Santiago, and they're going to make like a joined audio file of all of them saying it at the same time.
Which so that's pretty badass.
That's such a cool idea, right? And I applaud all those little things that each of the different factions are doing. Kara's standing right next to me, and you probably hear the faucet going because she doesn't understand how this works. Do the pirates do anything like that? Are they doing any like bonus objectives inside of the Discord?
I'm not fully aware.
The bonus
I think
objective this week was to take a picture.
No,
of
I know,
playing.
But are there like any bonus ones? Like, there's no like extra ones that you guys do in your Discord.
Well, I thought that was the extra one.
Okay, I guess not.
I know. So, no. I know historically they've done a lot of like grog related things or take a picture of yourself in costume. So they do some cool piratey stuff too.
I might be missing it.
If they do, yeah, if they do, she hasn't seen it, but she's been pretty active. And I have to say, it's impressive that this campaign has even gotten Kara as involved as she is, just because she's usually pretty, like, I don't say this insultingly, but she's pretty surface level, at least in regards to, like, to the communities. I'm not even saying it. It's like, she doesn't go to, like, Discord. She doesn't go to, like, websites. She doesn't follow YouTube channels.
I regularly look at the website.
Yeah, so, right. So she's actually been telling me that she's been having like a really good time in the Discord talking to the other pirate players. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting thing where they've been able to pull people who don't necessarily do this like as a living, like we do, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think that's really cool.
I think that's the strength of the campaign, right?
Yeah, 100%. So pirate players, it's a dang shame that you're going to have to lose to the English, but I got to say, I applaud that you are making it as cool as you do.
The English are never going to quit fighting the French.
Oh, that's definitely for granted.
A tale as old as time, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think every single day, every single Frenchman that wakes up in their little silly country is like, man, I really wish that island off our coast would just disappear.
I mean, you guys are just like scissoring all day long.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, but it does raise the all important question. You became English daddy through some kind of subterfuge on your end. It definitely wasn't just because you applied for the position. So I have to ask you, are you actually good at this game?
Good at Blood and Plunder or good at the Summer of Plunder? Because those are two very different games.
If you make me repeat myself, I'm going to tell King George that you are a French spy. So I asked you a question. Now answer it.
I would say I'm a strong competitive player. In most game systems I play. So, but the Summer of Plunder is a different beast. It's got a whole different level of subterfuge and political banter that I'm learning very quickly.
Which raises the little bonus questions that I think at this point I'm going to ask every person who plays this game. Two very, very derisive things that are in this game. And I'm going to ask you, I'm just going to say a word. Okay. It's a word association game. It's kind of like I might say apples or pineapples, and you could say, yeah, I love apples. I love pineapples. Or you could be like, yeah, I really love bacon. Like, whatever. I'm just saying words, And you know, you can take it however you want. So, you know, I'm gonna do two of these. So I hope you're ready, sir. Are you ready for the Blood and Plunder pop questionnaire?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. English militia.
God, suck.
There are people who love English militia, and then there are the people who hate English militia.
Oh, I've had many a debate with people who are fervent about English militia, and I am not one of them.
So what is your take on it? Why do you not like them?
My play style is one of more – I like elite models. I'd rather have fewer elite models, but it's just a play style thing. If you want an army of militia to just throw chunks of dice and hope that these statistician gods are on your side, then English militia are the way to go.
Yeah, if you can roll tens like the Lord himself, the English militia OP –
There was one guy in the tournament that was rolling way above statistical average tens with his militia army, so props to him. Not me, though.
I will say, you're forced to use them this week, right? Because of that god-awful English garrison force. God, it's so bad.
Or play Port Royal, which is a great game, too. So
I agree. We've been trying to do both. I think this week we might be missing Port Royal, but I'm going to see if I can remedy that before the weekend's over. Now, if you were forced to use English militia, would you bring them to trained or would you give them a bayonet?
Bayonet. I'd rather bring more guys with bayonets and just be aggressive with them. You've got, because of their point cost, you've got the guys to be aggressive. Get up in the fight. Utilize your numbers strongly. I mean, sitting back in the back, you're going to lose a firefight typically just because of raw stats.
The really cool thing about the English militia unit is that you are told, you should just remember at the beginning of the game, you have a club that goes boom once. And then after that, it's just a club.
That's a good way to view it. Or a stabby stick, you know?
Correct. So that's the question is, do you spend the points to sharpen your club? That's really the question. At four points.
Maybe on one or two units, and those guys are your vanguard, and you've got the other guys in the back that'll kind of finish up the job.
There you go. So if you want to lead the way with inbred hillbillies who once reigned from the little island of England, by God, give them a sharp pointy stick and tell them go get them.
But I got to say, I love myself a unit of regulars with a bunch of downgrades. They're nice and cheap, and they're good at shooting.
There's a reason that English army or the British army is like one of the most played faction in England.
I wonder why.
Yeah, they're so good.
I ended up playing the English in Blood and Valor. I can't get away from the faction.
So as a weird quick aside, I believe that we met very briefly while we were at Adepticon. I believe I potentially with a friend of mine. I think I walked up to you while you were playing Blood and Valor. And I was actually asking about the game. I'm not sure if you remember that or not. I think that was you.
If it was this year, I didn't get to play Valor this year because it overlapped with Oak and Iron. And I got priorities on that game. But
and I will never be able to play Oak and Iron because Kara's vetoed it because she doesn't like tiny boats.
Tiny boats suck.
Yeah.
Tiny boats are amazing. You don't even have to paint those. If you want to play, I play with me.
Well, you live like on the other side of the earth or whatever.
That's true. But Adepticon 2026.
I'll be there. I'm there every year. I help clean up every year, so that's always fun. So if you're interested in helping clean up giant, massive piles of nerd crap and paraphernalia, stick around for after the show, because, man, it's fun. It's a lot of fun cleaning that con up.
Hey, if you want to help set up, we can always use that, too.
But there you go. So it's a time for you to decide if you're a creator or a destroyer.
or both.
Or potentially both. The godlike powers in your hands. All right. Second word association. I'm just saying words.
No,
it's
like
just a thing. It could mean anything. I could be referencing any game, any kind of like rule set. It's fine. I'm just going to, maybe I'm not referencing anything. But, you know, I just want to know what it's like to be gullible and just think about these things. Okay.
There we okay. go.
3-point pirate.
Overpowered.
So. Oh, yes.
Unbelievable. I actually really like the pirate model at sea. I think it's a great way to fill a boat. I've had a lot of fun with it. I won a tournament with the pirate list, Jack Rackham, for the win. But I didn't think they were overpowered until I fought against a swarm during the land tournament at Adepticon 2024, when a land pirate swarm that was upgraded to veteran just charged at my English militia and grenaded me to hell and back. And I was like, all right, I'm convinced this is it. They're overpowered. They've got too many arms for the points is what the real issue is.
My general way of looking at it is that they either need to make them inexperienced, remove brace of pistols. They need to do one of those two things. And I think they'd be fine for the most part.
Would you rather that than just making them 4 points? Because I like the flavor.
But I think what the reason they make it 3 is because of the drunk rule. I think is their thinking behind like why they make them cheaper. Cause they're like, yeah, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, cause they're probably not going to be attacking because none of the pirate factions other than like one or two of them, which I think is Black Caesar's Men
and Flying Gang.
Flying Gang does have it.
Flying Gang's probably the problem faction, to be honest, here.
I tend to agree.
They can't get drunk. Yeah.
And just the fact that they all get ruthless too. It's like, it's crazy.
Oof. Yeah. Ruthless. I mean, that's the list that I took to Adepticon or Historicon 2024 and won.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, Ruthless is amazing.
Ruthless is definitely one of the best rules in the game, and to have it on a 3-point unit, it's just crazy. Hold on one second.
That you can swarm easily and just fire like crazy. It's yeah.
You going to bed?
Yes.
All right. Good night. Love you.
Good night. Love you.
I don't know if that'll get left into the show, but I do love Kara. You know, it's true. As much as I say I don't when she's not around, it's true. Anyway, but yeah, so I think that the pirate debate is interesting because there's definitely, I don't want to say strong feelings. I think that Blood and Plunder is a very remarkably balanced game when you get to the top end. Obviously, there's some factions that are like kind of laughably bad, but they exist for a reason. Like I think Logwood Cutters is a good example of that. It's definitely the only faction where your guys can just kind of forget to load their guns at the beginning of the game, which is pretty funny.
I think Plunder strikes a really good balance of having a lot of flavor and history, but also having the potential to be a very competitive game. And there are very few games I walk away feeling that it's unbalanced. Typically, it's a decision that I made was bad, right? That yep. I lost. So
for sure. And I think that's 100%. And I think that's a miracle of the D10. I just think that the D10 is criminally underrated when it comes to percentiles.
No, that's actually why I got out of card games, because I got tired of feeling like the other deck was way better than mine from a balance perspective. And wargaming gets away from that in most cases.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, no game is perfect, but I think Blood and Plunder gets pretty dang close, and I do think that it makes it much more fun. I, unfortunately, am too much of a historical sucker where I have trouble leaving the 17th century. I just love the Buccaneer list too much.
Yeah.
Hopefully the new book that's coming in soon, TM, which will revitalize the 17th century list a little bit. I think that'd be really, really cool.
I'm a hardcore 18th century guy. I Raise the Black got me into the game, and I'm loyal to that time period. Plus, I love the look of a red coat. So
it was one of the unfortunate things that Pirates of the Caribbean did is I just cannot use the soldier kit for red coats because I'm like, I see colonial British red coat from like the American Revolution era, right, with their little tricorn and the specific jackets, and it's less puffy. And so I had to get some specific red coat models. When I start playing other factions, I'll use that box literally all day. But for some reason, I cannot get the red coat look out of my brain. I just can't do it.
No. I think Pirates of the Caribbean, which a lot of us were raised on, has definitely ruined some of our perspective there.
And that movie, and those movies are riddled with historical inaccuracies, but they are a heck of a lot of fun.
Oh, they're extremely fun movies. The show Black Sails has some red coat soldiers as well in the Caribbean. They're a little bit more grungy, though.
And I have been told by multiple people who know I play this game, they all say they absolutely love that show and that they'd want to play the pirate faction because I believe I haven't actually watched the show yet. We don't have Netflix. It's a long story. We're going to watch it. But the one of the main characters, I think, is Jack Rackham.
Yes, correct.
Right.
Not and that's, totally historically accurate, Jack Rackham, but he's a really fun character in the show, and that's what matters.
And if you're not having fun, then what's the point, you know?
No, exactly.
So there you go. And I'm assuming Anne and Mary are in it.
Anne's in it for most of the show. I won't spoil anything, but Mary does make an appearance. I mean, the show has been out for quite a few years, right? But in case anyone hasn't watched it.
which it includes me. So it's coming.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely think that the campaign has been a wild success, and we're only about a third of the way through it so far. So if you are on the fence, I'm going to get this episode out as quick as humanly possible, maybe potentially the day after we record it. It's really, really important that if you like this game, this is the kind of stuff you need to support, especially on a local level. Tell your stores, hey, we want to do this at your store. Even they don't even have to buy it necessarily, but if you can just play this game in stores where people can see it, it's such a cool game that you just don't see other games touch. I've never seen another game system that has been able to get such a like accessible version of a 28mm boat fight. I don't think there's really any other game that has done it other than like a convention game.
No, not at all. There's no game that has streamlined it in such a way that Blood and Plunder has.
But it still retains some of that crunch of like having to deal with the wind.
Oh, no, exactly. There's plenty of crunch for you to dig your teeth into. The beauty of the campaign, too, is you don't even have to play Plunder if that many models is intimidating. You can play Oak and Iron, which are fielding maybe three little ships, or Port Royal, which you only have like five or six guys. So,
and if you're not even interested in the era, they have rules that are surrounding it. You know, you could go sooner in human history. You can go to like Blood and Crowns, or you could go later in human history all the way up to World War I, which is just such a wildly cool way to use the same general framework of the rule set where you're still using the same dice. And generally speaking, the stats are all the same with obviously some variations. But if you're thinking to yourself, I really love historical games, but I do like that good mix of I don't say arcadey shooting kind of fun combined with a historical aspect to it, then I think it would be hard to find a system that is quite as approachable as the Firelock systems. And I say that with absolute love in my heart. And they don't even give me anything for doing this other than smooches when nobody's looking.
No, I mean, hey, those are the best smooches.
They sure are. They taste like rum, like vanilla, like sweet vanilla rum.
To go along your point, I think once you learn one of the Firelock games, a lot of the trends and some of the basic rules and the terminology does carry over. So it's very easy to learn these other systems very quickly. Blood and Valor, the World War I game, I think is a great example of that. It's basically Blood and Plunder, but the range bands are slightly better and there's better tech, obviously.
Obviously, a machine gun fires a little bit quicker than a 17th century musket.
Only slightly, you know, there's only a few more bullets coming out of it.
It's fine. It's absolutely fine. And you know what would make sea battles way more interesting? Artillery barrages.
Oh, yeah. And giant. Yeah. Yep.
You know what would make these buccaneer raids a lot more effective? A giant cannon that travels around on a railroad track.
Yeah. Or even a armored car.
Yeah. I think Henry Morgan would have had a lot easier of a time taking over like the Panama area if he had a bunch of tanks and armored cars. I'm just saying.
I don't know, it was pretty thick jungle. I don't know how far he would have gotten.
Well, you know what? That's that English ingenuity. And that's what we got in the English Channel. So you should root for the English team when it comes to the Summer of Plunder, because we're hopefully going to do super, super well. And we hope that anybody who is interested joins us along the way. And if you can't play English because you already accidentally joined another faction, just punch the French. That's good enough for me.
No, we're kicking ass and taking names of the English. Please join us, but if you don't, please join any faction and have a great time.
Yeah, I'm saying all this in jest, kind of. And I think it's an absolutely great time to get into this game, and if you are interested in joining this massive community that we all clearly quite love, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better time to do it than now. Any parting thoughts before we start closing up this piece of pure journalistic integrity?
No, but please, if you need to contact me, you can do it on Discord. I'm Lieutenant Goble or Admiral Goble if you're an English player. You can contact me at thievesharbor@gmail.com. And please check out Thieves Harbor, where we have a ton of really in-depth guides into Port Royal. And we're actually going to start creating more and more fan content, like scenarios or campaigns to go along with the game to really kind of grow that community as well.
Hey, it's hard to not love him, right? That's why he's English daddy. So definitely reach out to him if you need help. And if you need to reach out to me, you can find me at drddr.d on Discord or email me at furypainting@gmail.com. I do read that email every once in a while. It's kind of difficult for some reason. Every single time I tell it to notify me on my other email things, it never works. I'm eternally cursed with the case of the gremlins. I don't know why, but one day maybe I'll be able to bring it together. I won't, but you know, it's fun to pretend. And so guys, if you can, please give us a review on your podcast player of choice. Anything with words is especially helpful because it improves the algorithm that helps people find the show. And I think that for more people to find Blood and Plutter content is really, really important because there's not a lot of it, especially as far as podcasts go. I don't think there's very many. I think there's like maybe one other podcast that's out.
There's been a few over the ages.
Yeah. But. So if you don't listen to us, then go listen to them, I guess. I don't know. That'd be great. You were going to say something.
No, some have come and gone and some are consistent, but yours is great. I'm digging it.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Dad. And I have no intention of going anywhere. I'm good at speaking into this microphone. It's a way I let off stress. And so as long as the game continues to amuse me, I will continue to talk about it and we will torture everybody with the concept of 3-point pirates.
And now your peas don't pop. So
there you go. And no more. Are my peas powerful enough to pop through the filter? We'll see.
They sound like musket balls flying through the air.
Yeah, anybody listening to this, it's like that one gif of the on the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie where the ship's exploding around them. Well, the peas I'm popping are just like blowing everything up in their little cars. They're listening to this. Oh my gosh.
That gif is so overused, but I love it. It's just an amazing scene.
I don't know. I'm assuming it must be green screened in some way. Otherwise, I'm just amazed that he wasn't impaled by millions of little splinters.
I think it's all real time effects, practical effects. Lord of the Rings scenery tricks. I don't know how they did it.
Leave it to Disney. Just leave it to them. They got all that money. They could figure out anything. If only they'd use it for like world hunger or something. Anyway, we also like to thank the people in the background that help keep this podcast going. Kara for screaming stuff in the background and doing the editing, and Tim for helping run the network. Doesn't even play this game. I doubt he ever listens to the show, but we love him anyway because he's big, bald, and beautiful, and we'd love him. Yeah, that's the triple B's. Who doesn't love that? And so, guys, thanks for listening, Buccaneers. If you want anything specific, please email me, and we will do everything we can to make this show more prolific. I know that with the Summer of Plunder stuff going on, that's probably what we're going to stick to. But after that's over, we'll talk maybe more tactics. I was even thinking about maybe talking about actual real life. I don't even want to call it lore per se because it's like actually real life. You know, it's hard to say.
I don't think lore is inaccurate there.
Well, I'm sure if I were to look hard enough on the internet, I could find some lore that is not actually accurate.
Oh, for sure.
Did you know that the Lord Cthulhu was a buccaneer? I read that on the internet.
That's who controlled Panama, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, our Lord and Savior Cthulhu, owner of the Panama Isthmus.
He was just afraid of Henry Morgan, so he noped out.
He ran out. He ran away, his little tentacles quivering in fear. I mean, who else would use and who would invent the word isthmus other than somebody who has like seven tongues like Cthulhu? That's not a real word. Who made that word? I don't know. They say apparently you can't say Cthulhu's real name unless you have like seven tongues or whatever.
Well, I should get on that.
Yeah, you really should. Definitely, as a real quick side note, if you have the opportunity to go to Rhode Island, Providence, you should definitely go visit Lovecraft's grave. It's a pretty interesting thing. It's very, very nonchalant where it's located, and you would definitely miss it if you weren't looking. I walked all the way there. There's a picture of me there. It's a fun little trip in a graveyard. Interesting. Anyway, thanks for listening, Buccaneers. Make sure you keep plundering out there and don't touch too much booty. We'll catch you next time. Oh, bye. Seven seas and tales of daring flight. We toast to her, our cabin crew. If moon and stars so bright. If moon and stars so bright. Stormy gales and waters deep, Dr. D's guidance was our guide. The Scarlet Widow, fierce and proud, with honor and with pride. Inventor of soup on the ocean vast, his name forever sung. An inventor, a captain, a jaunty lass, upon the seas they flung. Hey!
the black and hoist the sails for the seas we roam. The cauldron bubbles rich and warm, our hearts that call it home. With spices from the seven seas and tales of daring fate.